got off, and walked down the hall. Roby knocked on the door of 701. He heard footsteps. They stopped. Roby sensed an eyeball looking at him through the peephole. The door opened. Vance wore black jogging shorts, a pale green Marine Corps t-shirt, and white ankle socks. She stared first at Roby, and then her gaze fell to Julie. Julie exclaimed,
"You're getting Super Agent Vance to cover your ass."
Vance looked back at Roby.
"Super Agent Vance? What the hell is going on? Who's the kid?"
"That's why I'm here," said Roby. Vance stepped back and let them pass through. She shut the door behind them. Roby said, "Got any coffee? This might take a while."
"I just put some on. I like mine black,"
said Julie.
"Oh, really?"
said a bemused Vance. "Michelle Cohen and her husband are dead," said Roby.
"What?"
exclaimed Vance. He sat on the sofa and motioned Julie to take a seat. Vance stood in front of him, hands on hips.
"Cohen is dead, how?"
"She was lying, like I said. The truth caught up to her."
"Why would she lie?"
"Her husband had gambling debts. This was a way out, or so they thought."
"How do you know they're dead?"
"I saw him with a third eye at a bar in Bethesda. She died later, along with two federal officers."
"What in the hell is going on? What federal officers?"
"Maybe that coffee first? I'll help you." He walked into the kitchen and Vance was right on his butt. She gripped his shoulder.
"You better start talking and making sense, and you better do it now, Roby."
"Okay. First, I don't technically work for DCIS.
Big surprise. What else?"
"This needs to be off the record."
"The hell it is."
"You want that cup of coffee now?"
"What I want are some straight answers from you."
Roby poured out two cups of coffee and handed one to her. He looked out the window at the lighted monuments in D.C. He pointed to them. "What's it worth to you to keep that place safe?" he said, turning to Vance.
"What's it worth? Hell, it's worth everything."
Roby took a sip of his coffee. "Now, what's it worth to keep that girl in there safe?"
"You haven't told me who she is."
"Julie Getty."
"Okay, how does she figure into any of this?"
"She was on the bus that night, but got off before it blew up."
"How the hell do you know that?"
"Because I got off with her. That's why I knew Cohen was lying. As you can see, Julie and I aren't black." Roby took another sip of coffee and turned to look back at the monuments. Vance stood there rocking back and forth on her heels, obviously trying to process this stunning revelation. Finally, she stopped rocking.
"You were on that bus? Why? And why am I just finding out now?"
Julie said,
"Because it was a need to know and you didn't need to know, at least back then."
They both turned to see Julie standing in the doorway. Vance looked from her to Roby.
"Need to know? So you're in intelligence? I swear to God, Roby, if this is some CIA bullshit that we've been running around in circles on, I will seriously consider shooting somebody, starting with you."
"There's something off with this whole case, Vance, and there has been from the start."
"Roby, you have a ton of explaining to do, starting now. What were you doing on that bus, and what happened there, and who blew it up?"
"I don't know who blew it up, but it had to be done remotely, not a timer."
"Why?"
"They didn't want to kill either of us, that's why."
"Again, why?"
"Don't know. I just know that they want one or both of us alive for some reason." Vance turned to Julie.
"What were you doing on that bus? Can I have my coffee first? Jesus, here."
Vance handed Julie her cup.
"Now, what were you doing on the bus?" "Some guy murdered my parents. My mom sent a note to me at school, or at least I thought it was from my mom. The note told me to get on that bus and meet them in New York. When I did, the same guy who killed my parents got on and attacked me. Will helped stop him. We got off the bus, and that's when it blew up. Knocked us both off our feet."
Vance snapped.
"It was your gun we found near the bus. You were in Jane Wynn's apartment. You were going to kill her." "Just listen to him, Agent Vance,"
pleaded Julie.
"Why should I? Because somebody killed my parents, and Will saved my life more than once, actually. He's a good guy."
When Vance looked back, Roby was sipping his coffee, staring out the window, his back to her. Vance calmed and said,
I think I'll take a cup of coffee, too.
Julie poured one and handed it to her. Vance glanced at Roby.
Is the rest of what you're going to tell me just as bad?
Probably worse, he replied.
You've put me in an awkward situation. I should report all of this.
Agreed. You should. I did with my people, only to find out we had a traitor or two in the ranks. I wonder what the odds are of there being more. She hiked her eyebrows.
You mean at the Bureau?
You never had any bad apples?
Not many. It only takes one.
Noted Julie. It only takes one. Vance sighed and slumped against the counter.
What do you want me to do?
Chapter 68. Roby turned the Volvo in at Dulles Airport and took the shuttle bus to the main terminal. He bought a ticket on a United Airlines flight, leaving for Chicago in about 2 hours, went through security, and hit the restroom along with a dozen other guys. He went into a stall with his duffel bag and came out later with a collapsible roller and wearing a warm-up suit, glasses, and a ball cap. He walked to an exit, rode the bus back to the car rental outlets, leased a new set of wheels using a credit card under an alias, an Audi this time, and sped west on the toll road. He peered in the rearview mirror. If anyone could keep up a tail after that, they deserved to win. An hour later, he pulled into his hideaway in the woods. He drove the car into the barn and closed the doors. Using a rake to shove straw out of the way on the floor of the barn, he revealed a metal hatch. He removed the hatch and hoisted himself down through the opening. He flicked a switch, and old fluorescent tube lighting blinked on. He skipped down the metal steps and put his feet down on a solid concrete floor. He had not built this place. The farmer who'd originally owned the property had grown up in the 30s. When the 50s had come along, he'd decided to build a bomb shelter under his barn, thinking that some wood, straw, and inches of concrete could protect him from any thermonuclear shenanigans the Soviet Union might decide to throw at America. Roby moved down a short hallway and stopped. In front of him was a wall of firepower that he had drawn on in the past to accomplish his work. It included pistols, rifles, shotguns, and even a surface-to-air missile launcher. It seemed James Bondish, but was actually just the typical stock and trade for people in Roby's field. He took down what he thought he might need and stacked it against one wall. He opened a drawer of a workbench and pocketed a couple of electronic transmitters. He spent another 10 minutes picking out various other items that might come in handy and packed everything up in a large duffel bag. He carried it up the steps, closed the hatch, spread the straw back over it, and put the duffel in the trunk of the Audi. 5 minutes later, he was speeding back east. He checked in at an extended stay motel and unloaded his equipment. He changed clothes and called Julie. Roby had left her in the care of Vance in the FBI. Vance had only told her superiors that Julie was a possible witness and needed protection. Two agents from out of town had been called in to assist with the protection detail. Right now, Roby didn't really trust anyone in D.C. Julie sounded excited.
I got an idea. I called the Brooms on the phone you gave me, and I got a text back. They want to meet.
You know, it's probably not the Brooms, right? Said Roby in a calming tone. They could have had the Brooms' phone, and when they got your call, they just texted back to your number. If it were the Brooms, they probably would have simply called.
Do you always have to be a downer?
Where and when? She told him.
Can you come and pick me up?
Julie, you're not going anywhere near that place. He could almost see her face falling across the digital ether.
What?
This is most likely a setup. You're not going. I'll handle it.
But we're a team. You said so.
I'm not putting you in any more danger than you already are. I'll handle it and then report back to you.
That sucks.
I'm sure from your point of view it does suck, but it's the smart thing to do.
I can take care of myself, Will.
Under most circumstances, I would agree with that. This is not one of those circumstances.
Thanks for nothing.
You're welcome. But she had already clicked off.
Roby put the phone back into his pocket and mentally prepared for the upcoming meeting.
At some point, whoever was behind this would no longer be interested in keeping him alive. He wondered if that time was about to come. He gunned up and slipped a few other items into his jacket pocket, then called Vance and filled her in.
I'll come with you.
Are you sure?
Don't ask me again, Roby, because my answer might just change.
Chapter 69.
The Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial's official opening had been delayed because of a hurricane that had exhibited incredibly bad timing as it swept up the East Coast. But now the memorial was open. The centerpiece was the Stone of Hope, a 30-foot-high statue of Dr. King, comprised of 159 granite blocks fashioned to look like a single chunk of stone. Its official address was 1964 Independence Avenue, after the 1964 Civil Rights Act. The memorial was roughly equidistant between the Lincoln and Jefferson memorials, and sited along the line of leadership between the other two memorials. It was adjacent to the FDR Memorial, and was the only memorial on the National Mall dedicated to a person of color and a non-president. Roby knew all of this, and had even attended the opening ceremony for the memorial. But tonight, he was only interested in survival. Roby spoke quietly into his headset as he eyed the memorial. You in place? Vance's voice came into his ear.
Roger that.
See anyone?
No.
Roby kept moving and kept looking. He had on night vision goggles, but they couldn't see what wasn't there. Julie? The voice was to his left, near the memorial. It was a man. Roby tightened the grip on his pistol and spoke into his headset again. Did you hear that?
Yes, but I don't have a visual on the source yet.
A second later, Roby did. The man stepped clear of the memorial. In the wash of moonlight, and with the aid of his special goggles, Roby could see that it was indeed Leo Broom. He recognized him from a photo he had seen in the man's apartment. Vance's voice came into his ear.
Is that Broom?
Yes. Sit tight and cover my back. Roby moved forward until he was within 10 feet of the other man. Mr. Broom? The man immediately ducked back behind the memorial. Mr. Broom? Roby said again.
Where's Julie? Broom said.
We didn't let her come, called out Roby. We thought it might be an ambush.
Well, that's exactly what I'm thinking, said Broom. Just so you know, I've got a gun, and I know how to aim and hit what I'm aiming at.
Vance spoke up.
Mr. Broom, I'm Special Agent Vance with the FBI. We just want to talk to you.
You saying it doesn't mean you are with the FBI.
Vance came out into the open and held her weapon up and her shield out.
I am with the FBI, Mr. Broom. We just want to talk, to try and find out what's going on here.
And the other guy, said Broom, what about him?
Roby said, I know that Julie's parents are dead, Mr. Broom. I've been trying to help her find their killers.
Curtis and Sarah are dead?
So are Rick Wind and his ex-wife, both murdered. Broom appeared around the edge of the memorial.
We've got to put a stop to all this.
Couldn't agree with you more. And with your help, maybe we can. But first, we need to get you to a safe location, and your wife, too.
That won't be happening.
Did they get to your wife? Asked Roby.
Yes, she's dead.
Roby said quickly, Were you with her when it happened?
Yes, I barely got out and...
Roby was running full tilt toward Broom. Get down, now, down! But he knew he was already too late. He heard the crack of the shot. Broom whipped around and then fell where he had stood. He hit the dirt hard, twitched once as his heart gave a final pump, and then lay still. Roby reached him, ducked down, and surveyed the area. The shot had come from the left. He called this out to Vance, who was already on her phone. Roby realized this had been a setup from the start. He was never intended to get any information from Leo Broom. They were still just playing him,
giving him a tantalizing piece of gold and then jerking it away when he got too close. Whomever he was confronting knew far more about everything than he did. They had assets on both sides, something he didn't.
Vance knelt down next to Roby.
Is he dead?
Round blew right through his head. He won't be talking to anyone anymore. She let out a long breath and stared down at the dead man.
They are always one step ahead, it seems.
It seems, said Roby.
You were telling him to get down before the shot. How did you know?
They killed his wife, but he got away? I don't think so. Same thing happened with Julie. They don't let people just get away.
But what purpose did it serve letting Leo Broom live? He could have told us something.
They weren't going to give him the chance, Vance.
So why let him come here at all? If they were following him, they could have killed him at any point.
This seems to be a game to them.
A game? People are dying here, Roby. Some game.
Some game. Chapter 70. Roby sat in his apartment in the dark. Vance and a quartet of FBI agents were keeping watch over Julie. He had told the teenager about the Brooms' murders. She had taken it stoically, hadn't cried, but apparently just accepted it as a fact of life. Maybe that was worse, thought Roby. It didn't seem right that a 14-year-old should have her emotions so hardened that violent death didn't shock anymore. He had come back here because he needed somewhere to go that didn't involve other people being around. And though he had a room at the extended stay residence, he had come back here instead. He wasn't concerned about killers coming for him. At least not yet. They want me alive for something, he thought. And then they'll want me dead. He had strained his mind going back over missions he'd performed in the recent past. It would seem that in his line of work there would be many people who would want revenge against him. Too many to plausibly investigate. But he had never failed on a task, and that meant his target always had died. And he had exited successfully each time, which meant that his identity should have remained a secret. But his handler had been turned, which meant that Roby had been exposed to anyone with the ability to pay. He rose and looked out the window. It was 2 a.m. There were few cars moving down the street, no people. But then he caught sight of someone, and he moved closer to the window for a better look. Annie Lambert brought her bike to a stop outside the apartment building, got off, and rolled it into the lobby. When she got off on her floor, Roby was waiting for her. She looked surprised to see him, but then apparently noted the pain in his features.
You okay?
Had better days. Long one for you, obviously. She smiled and struggled with her bag. Roby took it from her, slung it over his shoulder.
Thanks. I messed up today. Had to work overtime to repair things.
What happened?
Blew official protocols. I bypassed my direct supervisor to get a question answered because my direct supervisor wasn't around. Got called on the carpet for it.
That doesn't seem right. In fact, it seems fairly petty.
Well, when you don't get paid much to handle important issues, folks stand more firmly on titles and lines of authority than maybe they should.
I think you're being overly generous.
Maybe I'm just tired.
Here, I'll help you to your door and you can get some sleep. As they walked down the hall, she said,
You don't seem too good either.
Like you, a long day.
Petty rules, too?
A little different.
Life can suck sometimes.
Yes, it can. They reached her door. She turned to him.
When I said I was tired, I didn't mean I needed to go to sleep. Would you like to come in for a drink?
You sure you're up for it?
We both look like we could use one. Nothing fancy like your wine. I can only afford beer.
Okay. They went inside. She put her bike away and pointed Roby to the kitchen, where he got out two beers and came back into the living room. He felt guilty that he knew the layout of her apartment from looking at it through the telescope. It fit the image of a young government worker whose salary was in no way commensurate with her brains or ability. Everything was on the cheap, but Roby noted one oil painting of a harbor scene and a couple pieces of good quality furniture that had probably come from Lambert's parents. When she came back out of her bedroom, she wore loose-fitting jeans and a long-sleeved t-shirt, and her hair was pulled back in a ponytail. Her feet were bare. He handed her a beer, and she plopped down in a chair and curled her feet up under her. Roby sat opposite, on a small faux leather love seat.
Nice to get out of the professional armor.
Until tomorrow morning, which is almost here.
I actually have the day off tomorrow. Or today, as you pointed out.
She took a sip of beer. Roby did the same. Why's that?
The president is out of town with most of his personal staff. When he gets back, there's a big White House dinner. I have to work the event, so I'm going to enjoy my day off.
I would, too. She smiled resignedly.
Especially since I've been working weekends for the past month, and staff morale is a little low.
Why's that?
The president isn't doing very well in the polls. The economy is awful. The next election is not shaping up to be easy or pleasant.
Country split right down the middle. No election is easy anymore.
True. I could never be a politician. It just hurts too much, you know? Every second of every day, someone is judging you. And not just for your positions on issues, but for how you talk, look, walk. It's ridiculous.
So have you given any more thought to what life will look like for you after the White House?
I'm in a phase of life right now where I just take each day as it comes.
Not a bad thing, actually.
Some would call it lazy.
Who cares what some think?
Exactly.
Great minds think alike, in fact. She reached over and clinked his beer with hers.
To great minds.
To great minds, he agreed with a grin.
So, is this officially our first date?
Technically, I wouldn't think so, replied Roby. It was more spontaneous. But we can make it anything we want. It's a free country.
I really enjoyed drinks at the W.
First time I've done something like that in a while.
Me too.
At your age, you should be out a lot.
Maybe I'm older than I look.
She teased. I doubt that.
I like you, Will. I like you a lot.
You don't really know me yet.
I'm a good and quick judge of people. Always have been.
She paused, took a swig of beer.
You make me feel, I don't know, good about myself.
You have a lot of reasons independent of me to feel good about yourself, Annie. She set her beer down.
Sometimes I get depressed.
Hell, we all do. She rose and sat down next to him. She touched Roby's hand with hers.
I've had a couple of bad experiences with guys.
I promise you won't have one with me. Roby had no way to guarantee this, but as he said it, he believed it to be the truth. At the same moment, they each leaned toward the other. Their lips touched gently. Then they drew apart. When Lambert opened her eyes, he was looking at her.
Did you not like that?
No, I liked it a lot, actually. They kissed again. I'm a lot older than you, he said, as they pulled apart once more.
You don't seem a lot older.
Maybe we shouldn't do this.
Maybe we should do exactly what we both obviously want to do.
She murmured in his ear. They kissed once more, not gently this time, but hungrily, both breathing hard. Roby's hand slipped to her thigh, and he caressed it. She edged her arms around his back and squeezed. Her mouth touched his ear.
The bedroom might be more comfortable.
He rose, lifting her into the air as he did, and carried her to the bedroom door. She hit the door lever with her foot and pushed it open. Roby kicked the door shut behind them. They took their time, disrobing each other. She looked at his tats and scars and the wound on his arm. She lightly touched it.
Does it hurt?
Not anymore.
How did you do it?
It was just something stupid. He pulled her to him. A minute later, they slid between the sheets,
their clothes in a commingled pile on the floor.
Chapter 71. It was 6 in the morning, and Roby was on the move again. His rental glided down the dark street. As soon as he left Annie Lambert still lying in her bed, he had regretted sleeping with her. The sex was wonderful. It had left him shaky and warm and completely out of sorts. It had been a liberating feeling. And yet, it still had been a mistake. He had essentially left a man dead on the National Mall to go and screw a White House staffer. He hadn't been thinking about the case while in bed with her. Well, that would change right now. He called Vance. Despite the early hours, she picked up on the second ring.
I'm in the office. Actually, I never left the office. Where are you?
Driving.
Driving where?
Not sure.
What happened to you last night? You just sort of disappeared after we got Julie squared away.
He didn't answer.
Roby?
I just had to step back for a bit, get my head straight.
Is it straight now? Because we have a case to work.
Yeah.
I didn't have dinner, and I haven't had breakfast. There's a 24-hour place around the corner from WFO. You know it?
I'll meet you there in 10 minutes, said Roby. He beat her there and had already ordered them both mugs of coffee when she walked in. I thought you said you hadn't been home. You're wearing fresh clothes, he said.
I keep a set at the office,
she replied as she sat down and picked up her coffee and took a sip.
You don't look good.
Should I look good? He wondered for a moment if she could tell he had been with another woman. They sat in awkward silence drinking their coffees until Roby said, How's Julie?
Fidgety, depressed. I think she believes you've abandoned her.
How did you explain things to your boss about all this?
I skirted the line, told him some things, didn't tell him others.
The waitress came over and they ordered. After she had refilled their coffee, she left. Roby studied Vance. I'm not looking to derail your career over this, Vance.
You know, you can call me Nikki, if you want.
This offer seemed to deepen Roby's guilt. Okay, Nikki. At the end of the day, you need to be able to walk away from this with everything in your life intact.
I don't think that's possible, Roby.
My point is you don't have to cover for me. It was unfair to ask it of you.
And my point is, if I don't cover for you, the FBI will come down like a ton of bricks. Too many questions, not enough answers.
I've got some professional cover.
Not enough. And quite frankly, I'm not just doing it for you. If everything does come out, my butt is probably off this investigation, and it'll get so muddled, we'll probably never figure it out. And I obviously have a real problem with that happening.
Just so we understand each other, said Roby.
I'm not sure I completely get you, but that's neither here nor there. I'm not your shrink. I'm just working with you to see if we can put away some killers.
Leo Broom. Anything found on him that would help? He said they had gotten to his wife.
He had nothing on him, but trying to trace where he came from. There was no car parked nearby that was unaccounted for. That late at night, we could rule out the metro, probably. We'll check in with cabbies to see if we can determine where he was picked up.
Or else he could have walked, pointed out Roby. But there was no hotel room key card? Nothing else to show where he was staying?
Nothing like that. But we did find one thing.
What was that?
A hoplite tattoo on his forearm, identical to the one on Rick Wynn's arm. And it has to match the one Julie said her dad had on his arm.
So they must have known each other in the army then.
What if this isn't connected to you after all? They were in the army together, maybe had some secret. Now it's come back to haunt them.
Still doesn't explain me and Julie walking off that bus, or them missing you and me in front of Donnelly's.
No, I guess it doesn't. You said they let him escape after they killed his wife. Part of the game, you said. They might be screwing with you, but there has to be some purpose to it all.
I'm sure there's an excellent purpose. I just don't know what it is.
If this is a contest of sorts between you and them, there must be something in your past to account for it. Given that any thought?
Some, but I have to give it a lot more.
What line of work were you in, Roby? DCIS isn't your real home, but somewhere else in the federal government obviously is.
He drank his coffee, said nothing, because there was nothing he could say.
I'm not read in. Is that why your lips aren't moving?
I don't make the rules. Sometimes the rules suck, like now, but they're still the rules. I'm sorry, Nikki.
Okay. You don't have to answer, but hear me out, okay?
Roby nodded.
I think you were at Jane Wynn's apartment to kill her as some sort of sanctioned hit. Only you didn't pull the trigger for some reason. But someone else did, from long range. You took her youngest child to safety and then got out of there. Then you got roped into investigating a crime you were present at under the cover of a DCIS badge.
She paused, studied him.
How am I doing?
You're an FBI agent. I would have expected no less.
Tell me about the hit on Wind.
It wasn't really sanctioned. I never should have been dialed up, but I was. Person who did it is now a burnt pile of bone.
Cleaning up loose ends?
How I see it, yeah.
So someone is playing with you, digging you in deep. Seems like the start of it was your going after Jane Wind. Her hubby was already dead. So she dies, the winds are out of the way. Point one.
Roby finished his coffee and sat up, looked more attentive. Keep going.
Point two, Julie's parents are killed. We know they were friends with the Brooms, and Rick Wind and Curtis Getty had the same tattoo on their arms. It must be from them serving together in the military. Have your people connected them up yet?
Still working on it.
Point three, so Getty, Broom, and Wind, including their spouses, or in Wind's case, ex-wife, are all dead.
Roby nodded and took up the thread. I try and make my escape on that bus. They knew that I would. Julie gets routed to the same bus by a message supposedly from her mother. We get off. The bus blows up.
The attack outside of Donnelly's where you and I should have been killed?
More window dressing, more playing with my mind.
Some playing. A lot of innocent people were killed, Roby.
Whoever's behind this could care less about collateral damage. They're chest pieces to them, nothing more.
Well, I'd love to slap a pair of cuffs on people who think like that.
But what's the end game? Why do all of this? She took another sip of coffee.
So where'd you spend last night?
The image of a naked Annie Lambert sitting astride him flashed into Roby's mind before Vance had even finished her question. I didn't sleep much, he admitted truthfully. Their plates of food came, and they spent some time digging their way through eggs, bacon, toast, and hash browns. When they were through, Vance pushed her plate away and said,
How do you want to attack this?
Priority one is keeping Julie safe. We obviously had a mole in our operation, and I have to count on the Bureau.
We will do all we can to make sure no harm comes to her, Roby. What's the second priority?
I have to find out who in my past wants me this bad.
You have lots of possibilities.
Too many. But I have to narrow it down, and I have to do it fast.
You think this thing is on a timer?
Actually, I think the timer is just about up.
So what are you going to do?
Take a trip far away from here. Vance looked astonished.
You're leaving?
No, I'm not. Chapter 72. Roby sat in the small room that he had used as an office for the last 5 years. No chubby middle-aged man in a rumpled suit came to bring him yet another flash drive. He was not here for another mission. He was here to see what had come before. The trip he had referred to with Vance had been one taken in his mind. He stared at the computer screen in front of him. Staring back at him were the reports on his last 5 missions that had carried him back a full year in time. He had eliminated, at least for now, 3 of them. The last 2 had captured his attention for a couple of reasons. They were the most recent ones, and they involved targets with long arms and many friends. He clicked a few computer keys and an image of the deceased Carlos Rivera appeared on the screen. The last time Roby had seen the Latino, he had been screaming obscenities at Roby in underground Edinburgh. Roby had killed Rivera and the man's bodyguards and made what he thought had been an undetected escape. Rivera had a younger brother, Donato, who had taken over much of his brother's cartel operations. The book on Donato was that he was every bit as ruthless as his late brother, but with far less ambition. He was content to run his drug empire without inserting himself into the political situation in Mexico. Perhaps this was also due to what had happened to his big brother. Still, he might want to avenge Carlos's death. And if he had found out Roby's identity through Roby's handler, he might have the necessary information to do so. In his mind's eye, Roby went through the events leading up to the killing of Carlos and company. After completing this process, he thought, "Do I fly to Mexico and attempt to kill Donato?" Something deep in his gut told Roby that the man's relations could care less who had gunned Rivera down. Little brother was alive and doing very well without big brother around. So Roby moved on to the next target of interest, Khalid bin Talal, one of the Saudi princes, a fixture on the Forbes 400 list, richer even than Rivera. Once more, Roby closed his eyes, and this time transported himself back to the Costa del Sol. On the third night, the target had walked right into his crosshairs along with the Palestinian and the Russian, geopolitically an odd couple. Talal had exited his motorcade, walked up the steps to the hulking plane. Roby had lost visual on him for a few seconds, but then Talal had sat down across from his fellow conspirators. Roby's shot had hit the man dead center in the head. No possibility of survival. Roby had gunned down two bodyguards, disabled the plane, executed his escape, and been on the slow ferry to Barcelona within the hour. Clean kill, clean exit. And the truth was, bin Talal was not popular in the Muslim world. His ideas were too radical for the moderates. The ruling family was well aware that he desired to overthrow it, and it was largely at the family's behest that Roby had been sent out on this mission. And even the Islamic fundamentalists tended to give Talal a wide berth because they did not trust his close business ties to Western capitalists. He sat back in his chair and rubbed his temples. If he still smoked, he would have lit up right now. He needed something to take his mind off a deep sense of failure. Something was staring him in the face. Perhaps it was the truth, the answer he needed. But it wouldn't come. He went back through the three missions previous to Rivera and bin Talal. Every step, like he had with the Latino and the Muslim. Clean executions, clean exits, all of them. And yet, if not one of them, who? He took out his pistol and laid it on the desk in front of him, the muzzle facing away from him. He stared down at the Glock, a fine weapon. It almost always performed flawlessly. This was not a mass-produced piece. This was customized to fit his hand, his grip, and his way of shooting. Every piece was meticulously crafted to make success a foregone conclusion. But it wasn't just about aiming straight. There were a million parts to every mission, and if any one of them failed, so did the mission. For Roby, the easiest part was the actual killing. He was good at it, and had some semblance of control over events. The other parts of the puzzles often came down to others doing their job, totally outside of his control. He had not always killed on behalf of the U.S. government. He had worked for others, all allies of the Americans. That's what had gotten their attention. The pay was better on this side of the Atlantic. But if it had solely been about money, Roby would have moved into another line of work a long time ago. There was a reason he kept taking these assignments, kept pulling the trigger on one monster after another. He had never talked to anyone about it and doubted he ever would. It wasn't that the memories were too painful. It was that he had frozen that part of his mind. He was incapable of articulating a single sentence about it. That was the way he wanted it. Anything less would not allow him to function. He rose from behind the desk, the sense of failure now profound. His phone was buzzing as he reached the door of his car. It was Blue Man. They had tracked down the military ties among Curtis Getty, Rick Wind, and Leo Broom. They had all served together.
I'm on my way, said Roby.
Chapter 73.
Same squad, said Blue Man.
He and Roby were sitting in Blue Man's office.
They fought together for the entire campaign, along with other assignments post-Gulf One.
It was no wonder Julie didn't know about it, remarked Roby. She wasn't even born yet.
And her father was tight-lipped about his service, said Blue Man. Maybe he didn't even tell his wife.
I know some soldiers don't talk about their time on the battlefield, but they don't usually keep the fact that they actually served secret. Anything in his records to warrant such secrecy?
Maybe.
Blue Man pulled out another manila envelope from a stack he had on his desk.
As you know, during Gulf One, Allied forces never actually went into Baghdad. The mission was to drive Saddam Hussein from Kuwait, and that mission was accomplished.
100 days, said Roby. I remember.
Right. Now, the Iraqis had reportedly looted much of Kuwait, which is one of the richest Gulf states. Cash, gold, precious jewels, that sort of thing.
Is this going where I think it is?
Nothing could be proven, but Getty, Wind, and Broom might have had sticky fingers when they were in Kuwait. They were each given general discharges under honorable conditions. You told Julie that her dad got an honorable discharge based on medical reasons.
That's right, I did.
If they were involved in the thefts, do you think they were able to get their loot back to the States? None of the three showed any signs of wealth, pointed out Roby. The Gettys worked at crap jobs and lived in a crappy duplex. The Winds weren't wealthy. And I saw the Broom's apartment, nothing special.
Curtis Getty probably put most of it up his nose. Rick Wynn's finances showed that he never earned much money, but he owned a home, and he had the pawnbroker's business. Again, we could find no record of how he was able to buy the business.
But he stayed in for the full ride. How would that be possible if he was believed to be a thief?
Believed to be is the operative phrase. Lack of evidence, I suppose. But the general discharge he did receive speaks volumes, because there was nothing else in his service record that would have warranted anything other than an honorable discharge.
So they got him in the end.
And he apparently didn't contest it.
Again, speaks volumes. If he did steal the stuff and still got his full ride and pension and no jail time and the fruits of his larceny, Wynn probably thought he got a great deal.
And if he was rich from the thefts, why stay in?
We don't know how much they might have gotten away with. Maybe he saw it as his nest egg and decided to keep drawing his government check.
And Leo Broom?
Hit the jackpot there. His apartment in D.C. wasn't much to look at, but they had an oceanfront home in Boca Raton, and we tracked down an investment portfolio he'd hidden under another name. Had about $4 million in it.
Okay. At least it seems he stole from the Kuwaitis. So you think someone's coming for them after all this time? And why stick me in the middle of it?
You're the worrisome piece, Roby. The three ex-soldiers maybe fit a pattern. You don't.
Blue Man closed the file and looked across the desk at him.
You went back over your recent missions?
5 of them. They're cookie cutters. No clear reason why someone would want to come after me. And no clear reason why they wouldn't.
So I wasn't able to narrow down the possible suspects.
He brooded for a few moments. Julie said her mother told her killer that Julie didn't know anything.
What of it?
Didn't know what? About her dad's military service? I can tell you right now that that guy on the bus going after Julie was not Middle Eastern.
Means nothing. You're not Middle Eastern either. And yet you've worked on their behalf before. They could have hired local talent to do the job. Makes it easier than trying to slip one of their own into the country, especially these days.
Roby glanced up at him. So why didn't you tell Julie about these allegations of theft?
I decided to focus on the medals, and nothing was ever proven against Curtis Getty. He might be innocent.
But still.
What would have been the point?
Why? Roby asked again.
I have granddaughters.
Okay, said Roby. I can understand that.
But we don't seem to be any closer to the right answers, said Blue Man.
No. Maybe we are.
How so?
Roby stood. They want me involved in this somehow, whatever it is.
Granted. But how does that help us?
I need to make them try a little harder to engage my attention.
What do you mean?
I'm going to make them push harder. When people push harder, they make mistakes.
Well, make certain you don't push them so hard that you end up dead.
No, I want them to focus on me. There's been way too much collateral damage on this already.
Roby turned and walked out of the room. He was going to see Julie. He had nothing really to tell her, and like Blue Man had said, no good could come from informing her of things her father might have done in the past. Roby was convinced that whatever the three soldiers had done more than 20 years ago was irrelevant to the present situation. They were just convenient pieces on the chessboard. This is about me, thought Roby. It started with me, and it has to somehow end with me.
Chapter 74.
So Mr. Broom and Rick Wynn served with my dad in the army?
Said Julie. Roby was sitting with her in the FBI safe house. How safe it was, Roby wasn't sure, but he had few options left. The FBI agents guarding Julie looked professional and alert, and yet he kept his hand near his Glock and was prepared to gun them all down if they made a move to harm the girl. They fought in Gulf One. They left the army at separate times after that. Apparently a number of soldiers in their squad got that tattoo on their arm.
I still can't believe my dad was like a hero.
Believe it, Julie, he was. She fingered the zipper on her jacket.
Did you find out anything else?
Not really.
My dad must have been young when he left the military. I wonder why he didn't stay in.
No way to tell. Some guys do their stint and go on to other things.
Maybe if he'd stayed in, he might have, you know.
Well, he might not have met your mother either, if he'd stayed in.
That's true.
She eyed Roby closely.
Why do I think you're not telling me everything?
There was something in her look that Roby recognized. It was the same look he gave people who were simply telling him things he knew he wanted to hear. Because you're naturally suspicious. Just like me.
Are you holding something back from me?
I hold lots of things back from lots of people, but always for a good reason, Julie.
That's not really an answer.
He locked his gaze on hers, figuring that not to look at her now would be simply an exclamation point on his underlying deceit. It's the only one I have to give. I'm sorry.
So you haven't figured out what's going on then, have you?
Not really.
Do you need my help? And don't say you have to keep me safe. There's no such place. Not even here with super-duper FBI guys all over the place.
Roby was about to turn her offer down using this very safety issue, but stopped. Something had just occurred to him. Your mother said that you didn't know anything, right? When she was talking to the guy in your house?
That's what she said.
So that implies that your parents did know something. That your mother, in fact, probably knew why the guy was there. Why he wanted to kill them.
I guess that's right. But we've already covered this ground, Will.
And Leo Broom, right before he died, implied that he knew something, too. Julie wicked a tear from her right eye.
I didn't know him all that well. But he seemed like a nice guy. And I really liked Ida. She was always nice to me.
I know. It's a tragedy all around. Now Cheryl Cosman said that the day before your parents were killed, they had dinner with the Brooms at the diner. She said they looked like they had seen a ghost.
That's right.
When was the last time you talked to your parents before you went back to your house that night?
Just before I was put back in foster care. I never got a chance to sneak over and see my mom at the diner.
And how did your mom seem when you did see her last?
Fine, normal. We just talked about stuff.
And then later a guy is at their home looking to kill them. And your mother is not surprised by it? Julie blinked.
You mean something had to happen after I last saw her and before the guy showed up at our house?
No.
It had to be between you seeing her last and your parents having dinner with the Brooms, where they all looked like they had seen a ghost, according to Cheryl.
But we don't know what that something is.
But narrowing it down to a specific time period helps. The way I see it, either something happened with your parents, they found out something and told the Brooms, or the Brooms found out something and told your parents.
What about the Winds?
That's sort of the wild card. They weren't at the dinner, but they must be involved somehow, too. Otherwise, why would they have ended up dead?
Do you think it has something to do with their time in the military?
My gut tells me that it should. But all the facts don't point to that, namely my involvement in all this. If I'm right, and I'm the reason why this whole thing has been orchestrated, why involve your parents, the Brooms, and the Winds? I didn't know any of them.
So you really think all of this is tied to you somehow?
Roby could sense the question left unspoken. Was I the reason her parents were killed? Yes, I think it does. Too many coincidences otherwise. Julie pondered this.
So either the Winds, my parents, or the Brooms found something out. Because they were in the military together, the guys might have told each other about it. The bad guys found out, and they had to kill them.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Julie said, looking away from Roby. He let a few tense moments pass by before he spoke. Julie, I don't know what's going on. If this is really all about me, and your parents and the others were caught up in it, I'm sorry.
I'm not blaming you for what happened to my parents, Will,
she said, though her voice held no conviction. Roby stood and paced. Well, maybe you should, he said over his shoulder.
Blaming you isn't going to bring them back, and what I want hasn't changed. I want to get whoever did this. All of them.
Roby sat back down and looked at her. I think there was no more than a 24-hour window when whatever got your parents killed was communicated among Wind, Broom, and your dad. If we can trace a call or a movement or any type of communication among that group, we might be able to get a better handle on all this.
Can you do that?
We can at least give it a hell of a shot. The problem is, so far nothing in their background suggests they were involved in anything that could have been the catalyst for all this.
Well, they weren't the only ones in the squad, right? A squad consists of 9 or 10 soldiers, with a staff sergeant in command.
How do you know that?
American history class. We're studying World War II. So, my dad, Wind, and Broom are 3 guys. That means you have 6 or 7 more to track down.
Roby shook his head, wondering how he'd missed something that obvious. Then he looked down at Julie's chest. The laser dot was centered right over her heart. Chapter 75. Roby made no visible reaction to the laser dot. He knew it was from a sniper rifle. He didn't look to the window, where he knew the blinds must be partially open. The rifle and the shooter were out there somewhere, probably within 1,000 yards of a house that had just become as unsafe as it was possible to be. He inwardly chastised himself for not earlier noting the open blinds. He put his hands under the table separating him and her. He smiled.
What's so funny?
You ever play a game called Whack-A-Mole?
Are you feeling okay, Will?
He felt along the underside of the table. Solid wood, not cheap composite. That was good. About 1 inch thick. That might be good enough. It would have to be good enough. He would have to perform 2 movements, 1 with each hand. He drew a breath and his smile deepened. Because if Julie made any sudden movements, it would be over. I was just thinking about something that happened to me a long time ago. Hup! He flipped up the table with 1 hand so it was shielding Julie from the sniper, and drew his Glock with the other hand. Julie screamed as Roby fired, killing the overhead light. The rifle shot shattered the window and drove into the wood and passed through it, but the barrier had served to throw off the line of fire. It struck the wall to the left of Julie. Get down, snapped Roby. Julie immediately went to her belly. Roby heard footsteps rushing down the hall. Roby moved behind the table. He turned to Julie, who lay flat on the floor with her hands over her head. Are you okay?
Yes.
Did you open the window blinds? She peered up at him.
No, they were like that when I got here.
The door started to open. A voice called out, Roby, you okay? Roby recognized the voice as belonging to one of the agents guarding them. Roby called out, Put your gun down on the floor and slide it in the room with your foot. One of the men yelled, What the hell is going on, Roby? Just what I was about to ask you. Who opened the blinds in this room?
The blinds?
Yeah, the blinds. Because a sniper just took a shot right through that opening. So unless you have an answer, I'll shoot the first person that comes through the door. I don't care if it's you or anybody else.
Roby, we're the FBI.
Yeah, and I'm one seriously pissed off guy with a Glock. Where does that get us?
There's a sniper outside?
That's what I said. Didn't you hear the shot?
Hang tight.
He heard the feet running away again. Roby looked down at Julie and back over at the window. He wasn't hanging tight. He pulled out his phone, thumbed Vance's number. She answered. He said, Sniper at the safe house, mole somewhere. Need backup now. He clicked off, took Julie's hand. Keep low, he warned her.
Are we going to die?
Just keep down and follow me. He led her out of the room, cleared the hall, and they ran, not to the front or back doors, but to the opposite side of the house from where the shot had come. They crouched down in the room while Roby did a turkey peek out the window. There was no way he could do a clean sweep of the area with his naked eye. But he didn't see a scope reflection. Although the high-end equipment they had out there now wouldn't necessarily have such a signature wink of light. He had no idea if the guy who had told him to hang tight was an ally or foe. And Roby didn't think it was a good idea to wait and find out for certain. They would be expecting them to go out either the back door or the window on the side opposite from the sniper fire. So Roby planned to go out the front door. But first they had to get there. They moved back into the hall, and with Roby leading, they made their way slowly toward the front of the house. The house was in a neighborhood with one road in or out. There were no houses close by. You had to really want to get to the place. Someone evidently had. And he had done so with help from the inside. When Roby looked around the corner into the front room, he saw the body of one of the agents lying there, feet closest to the front door, blood around his neck. Not a bullet wound. Roby would have heard the shot, and only a shotgun would have made a gash that big. Had to have been a knife. Hand over the mouth, knife slash to the neck, not much sound. Death would come fast. Hand over the mouth. Killer would have had to get real close for that. Another traitor in the ranks.
Oh my God.
He looked back at Julie. She had just seen the body. Look away. He thumbed his phone keypad again. Vance picked it up. Roby could hear the sound of her engine. She must have had it revved to over 100. Got one dead agent. Don't know where the others are. Dead guy has up close wound. Whoever nailed him, he thought was a friend.
Shit!
Exclaimed Vance. How far away are you?
3 minutes.
He put away the phone and turned to Julie. We're going to go out that front door, but we need to draw attention somewhere else.
Okay.
She said, her gaze darting between Roby and the dead man.
How?
Roby cleared the chamber on his pistol, popped the mag, pulled out the two top rounds, inserted the two rounds he'd taken from his jacket pocket, and smacked the clip back into place. He racked the slide, which pushed one of the new rounds into the chamber. He edged to the door and used his foot to move it open.
What are you going to do? Shoot your way out of here?
Cover your ears.
What?
Cover your ears and look away from the door. Roby waited while she did so. Then he aimed and fired. The first round hit the gas tank on the Buick car parked in the driveway. The incendiary round ignited the gasoline vapor and the explosion lifted the sedan right off the asphalt. His second shot was aimed at the second Buick car, parked next to the first. A second later, it joined the fireball of the first. Roby grabbed Julie's hand and they sprinted through the doorway, keeping the wall of flames and smoke between them and, hopefully, whoever had just tried to kill Julie. They turned away from the house and ran down the street. Roby had debated trying to reach his car, but decided that that would be akin to painting a target on their heads. A car turned onto the street and accelerated. Roby saw the blue grill lights. He flagged Vance down. She hit the brakes and the Beamer skidded to a stop. Roby threw open the door, pushed Julie into the back, and jumped into the front passenger seat. "Go, now," he told Vance. She put the car in reverse and smoked her tire tread, backing down the street. She hit a J-turn, and as soon as the hood of her car was pointing in the other direction, she gunned it. She reached the end of the street and turned left. She looked at Roby, and then glanced at Julie, huddled in the back.
"You both okay? Nobody hurt?"
"We're okay."
"So tell me what the hell happened."
"Just keep driving."
Chapter 76. Roby rode shotgun, and he kept rotating his gaze to look behind and then over at Vance. His gaze was suspicious, and his hand gripped the butt of his Glock. That had been unbelievably close. If he hadn't looked down and seen the dot,